Hello and welcome to PCB Chat, where we talk with experts across the printed circuit design, manufacturing, and electronics supply chain. I'm Mike Buteau, Editor-in-Chief of PCDNF and Circuits Assembly. Today's podcast is sponsored by PCB West, the leading conference and exhibition for the printed circuit design and manufacturing industry. Join thousands of engineers and designers this September at the Santa Clara, California Convention Center. Visit the website at pcbwest.com for information. Today, we will be talking about the HDP User Group, or HDP for short. John Davignon is joining us. He's a facilitator with the organization, and John's a familiar face in the printed circuit industry. He has over 30 years' experience in process and product development, technical management, and environmental issues, working with such firms as Intel, ESI, Marex, TI, and MIT Lincoln Labs. Hi, John.
Hi, Michael. How are you doing today?
Great, thanks. So, John, let's just start at the beginning. What is HDP?
HDP stands for the High Density Packaging User Group International, and we're a nonprofit trade organization that offers a membership to companies involved in the electronic manufacturing supply chain. Our mission basically is to drive innovation in the electronic industry, reducing cost and time to market through active collaboration. And that's really one of the keys to HDP is the active collaboration in solving critical and emerging problems for the benefit of the membership. We accomplish this by basically improving the cooperation between system integrators, contract assembly manufacturers, and suppliers in the electronic manufacturing area. Our basic goals and premise is to use member resources, and that is supplemented by a small staff that works for HDP. And we basically, the activities are run in a domain where members can gain much more by joint activities than by duplicating work in each one of the member companies.
So it's following the, you know, somewhat classic model of performing joint R&D and tech transfer.
Yes, very much so. You know, with anti-trade laws and stuff, it's very hard for many groups to get together to do, say, pre-competitive development and in evaluations, whereas with a under a consortium type of scenario, we can get basically the whole supply chain together to look at a problem. And that's really where we kind of excel at, is that in our memberships, we have the complete supply chain there. So when somebody within that supply chain has a problem, sees or foresees a problem, or wants to look at, say, an emerging technology, we've got that complete supply chain to look at that from many sides, so that when we come up with an answer, say, or a conclusion, it's been vetted by at least some members of the complete supply chain. So that really gives a very strong and valuable insight into that situation or problem.
John, HDP has a variety of different members. Who makes up the organization?
We have a very large supply chain. So just to give you some idea, and I'll just do this as percentages, about 30% of our membership are OEMs, system integrators, which is great because we look at them as directing some of the research and the development. We've got about 18% are laminate suppliers, another 18% of material suppliers. That would be solder paste for all of our assembly and component work, as well as other various material suppliers, copper foil, resin. About 12% of them are PWB fabricators. We have some system assembly houses, about 6% of our membership right now. We have about 6% of them are test houses who help us to do the testing and evaluation, and other various component and other organizations and so on, about 6% of our membership. Right now, we've got about 50 members, about 50 companies around the globe, And that membership changes a little bit based upon what's happening in the industry, a little bit upon what kind of focus we're focusing on right now. We keep about those percentages. And again, you know, some of our major members would be Celestica, Cisco, Hitachi, IBM, Intel, Juniper, Keysight, Panasonic, Sanmina. Those are all on our board of directors, those companies. We got Flex that does some of the assembly. We've got DuPont for materials, Fujitsu. So we've got Asian members, and we also have U.S. Of course, U.S. are multinationals mostly. It's our members of ours. So we have Oracles and Rogers, iTech, Isola, Indium, again, Shikoku, TM.
So you really do encapsulate the whole electronics industry in that group. Yep. So is it the board that sets the organizational goals, or is that something that's decided upon by the entire membership?
It's basically decided on by the entire membership. We are strongly member resourced. So any member can bring up a problem or a situation that they would like to have evaluated. Again, whether that be something that the industry is seeing or something that perhaps they see coming in the future, you know, say an emerging technology that they want to have more information on. And any member can come to us and say, we'd like to start a project. That project then gets raised at one of our member meetings. We discuss it. If we can get several more members in there that are interested also in that project or the results of it, then we'll start a project. We'll start moving that project down through the three stages that we have in our system. But as you said, anybody can do that. The board kind of just directs the overseeing of, are you following the guidelines? They don't dictate what we look at. They just basically want to make sure that we're adhering to our charter and to our guidelines as to how we do something, not what we do. And truthfully, we will take suggestions from anybody in the industry. I mean, we try to go out there and find situations that are a problem or an area that needs investigated from anywhere. Because it's probably, if we find it from somewheres in the industry, it's probably going to affect several of our memberships because we do go through that whole supply chain.
Let's talk a bit about some of the projects that HDP has done. Maybe starting with some of the ones that you've had, you know, some successes. I know that there's probably some limitations in what you can share, but if you could just maybe, you know, give listeners an idea of the types of things that you work on and what's come out of them.
Right now we're running 24 projects, and that's,
oh my.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We are project based and it shows when you start looking at the various projects that we are running. And we usually run about that number. Now, remember, those are in different stages. I mean, right now we have 17 of those projects is in implementation. That means that we will be closing those, coming to hopefully conclusion within the next year. We have 5 of them in development stage and 2 or 3 of them in idea stage. And so if you want, I can give you a quick breakdown. 9 of the projects are in printed wiring board technology. We have 6 projects in the material technology category. 4 projects are in the printed wiring board assembly. 3 emerging technology projects, which is kind of exciting for us. And we have 2 projects in component packaging. So, like our membership, we also have various categories and projects that are going on. The beauty of that is if you're a member of HDP, you're not just like supporting board fabrication. you can, as you see, you can get a project that is directly related to your level, say, in the supply chain. And we've been very successful. I mean, just quickly, since in the last 4 or 5 years, we've won best paper at IPC. I think we won that in 2015 and again in 2017, and honorable mention in 2019. And those are for works that we want to bring out into the industry. As you mentioned, a lot of our projects are driven by our membership and for our membership. But the subtle difference is that sometimes the value to our membership is to get the information out into the industry so that the industry can perhaps adopt a new technology, or we can help to persuade a modification to a standard that, you know, needs to be changed. A lot of times we want to get this information out. Just as an example, our high frequency DK and DF test methods comparison, we wanted to get that out into the industry so people could understand the differences that we found in measuring DF DK by different methods. So it would help to make things more correlatable when somebody was, say, giving their specs in measured by one way or another. And then we had one with PressFit rework project, I think that won the 2017 best paperwork. This was information that we felt a lot of people needed to know about how many times you could rework PressFit connectors without seeing damage. And we've done that with several other projects. Our electro migration information, I think, is, again, very valuable. We're still working that so we could perhaps affect some JEDEC standards to let them, let them know that there's other, we'll say, problems or situations out there with cleaning. So a lot of the projects that we work, we're doing them specifically so that we can affect the industry. So we want to get that information out. We're doing a project with UL looking at glass types and how does that affect their having to change their testing standards. We're looking at smooth copper foil peel strengths, hopefully to be able to go out and say, do we need the 4 pound level, or can that be eased up so that some of our OEMs can use the smoother copper that they need in order to get up to the high frequencies that they have to design on. Those are some of the projects. Those last couple ones are ones that are right now actively being pursued, because as you, I'm sure, know, and your audience knows, frequencies are climbing. And as those frequencies climb, we need different materials. We need especially different copper foil structures, the signals running on the outside of it. A lot of times what we find is that the models don't predict what we're getting in real life. And we have several projects that are looking at why. Why aren't we able to predict what we're getting in boards as we start reaching these higher and higher frequencies? So that discrepancy needs to be answered for all the designers, for people to know, as well as our members. You had asked about a project. Well, we're on our sixth project, I guess, on materials evaluation. We started that off, I don't know, 5+ years ago when the lead-free materials.
And John, sorry to interrupt, but you're referring to laminates here?
Yes, exactly. We're looking at material laminates. And that started when, if you kind of now remember, when lead-free was a big issue. we've had so many since. It does. Well, we started back then. People wanted to know, can I, these lead-free laminate materials, how do they react? How reliable are those? Well, we started a project looking at that. We went through the lead-frees, and then the question came up, well, what about the halogens now? Because now all of a sudden we needed to get rid of the halogen freeze. So we've continued this project looking at lead freeze and halogen freeze, now higher speed, low loss. All of these materials were on our sixth leg of that project, and we must have evaluated, 50 plus materials using basically the same test board. It modifies or morphs a little bit, you know, simply because of things we learn. We need to test this or we don't need to test that anymore. But so we have a huge baseline of testing somewhat of the same way all the time, all these various materials for our members. And I know we've published some of that data, at least out into the public, when it is of, again, of value to our members to have that information released.
John, you mentioned earlier something about the phases of the projects and that there's three phases. Could you kind of briefly just go through how the projects go from ideation to completion? And typically, does every project end up getting finished, or do some just sort of run aground at a certain point?
Well, very astute on that question. Well, as I mentioned, almost anybody can propose a project. Just say, this should be looked at. Once we hear that, we'll go through and say, is there enough support here to evaluate that project proposal? If it is, and it doesn't take a lot, just a couple of members to do that, we goes into the idea stage. And at this stage, the project proposer invites all interested parties to work together to develop the goals and identify the problems and the issue. Now, at this stage, with a lot of people, they don't think understand, our project is open to the industry. You don't need to be a member of HDP to join a project in the idea or the definition stage. We really encourage getting outside information and experts onto those. One, because it helps us to understand, did somebody do this before us? I mean, you know, is this common knowledge that we just didn't know, and therefore we're kind of spending our time, you know, reinventing the wheel, which we just don't need to do. There's so many issues out there. So we love to get inputs from other people at that point in time. Now, if the project is well supported and the team agrees on the goals, then we'll move to the next phase, which is the definition phase. Again, the definition phase is open to other members. And this is where we do the detail planning. Okay, so we look at the scope of the project. We decide what's in scope, what's out of scope. We define the objectives and the deliverables. And we make sure that the whole team agrees on that. Sometimes that takes quite a bit of time if there's a lot of people with, and the issue, say, has a lot of different directions that it could go on. Now, sometimes at this point, we'll split the project. We'll say, well, we got, you know, these 10 people want to look at it from this angle and these 10 want to look at it from another. We might say we need two projects because we can't do them both at the same time. That's the stage really where quite a bit of the work is done in. I mean, it's in this defining what, who's going to do it. Do we have the resources and services to do all of it? We get commitments and then we start getting ready to move into the definition phase. Now, there's specific criteria which the board of directors wants to see to move on to that next phase. And so we would make basically a presentation to the board of directors saying, here's the problem. Here's what we want to do about it. Here's the deliverables that we will deliver. Here's the people and the resources. Here's the timeline. And we'd like to move on to the implementation stage. And implementation stage is really where we do the work. Some projects end at definition stage. That's simply because it is a problem or a perceived problem, but we can't define what to do about it to answer the question. Either there's no metrology, which often happens. There's no metrology to really measure what it is we need to measure to make the final conclusions. So a lot of those projects will get tabled until we can find a metrology, say, to do that. So not all of them go. Sometimes it's just good idea, but we can't find the resources. We're not a high-powered money group. This is a group that's resourced from its members. And if we say don't have the resources to do that, again, we might table it until we get the correct resources to do it. But if we have them, we'll move on to the implementation stage. And that's where we execute all of those project plans. Now, this is the stage that is only open to HDP members or specific non-members who are contributing critical resources to the project. And again, critical resources is usually something that we cannot get from our membership. That's when the investment's made by the project participants. That's when we track that. We track the progress very close and making sure that it's staying on schedule. As anyone has run a project, this is when you continually going back to the what's in scope and what's not in scope, because everybody can get excited as data comes in and you don't like scope creep. So, you know, as anyone who's run one understands scope creep.
Yeah. So, you know, having sat in on a couple of HDP meetings over the years, I know that you have semi-annual sessions where you update everybody on your progress. I think the first day is open to non-members and the second day is just for members, if I remember right.
Yes, yes. The first day is open to invited participants who don't have to be HDP members. And that's when we go over the idea and definition stage projects to let the industry, people like yourself, you know, media, understand what we're looking at doing. And then the second day is all of the implementation stage projects where we show data. We have discussions on the data that all the projects are, wherever they are in their timeline, we look and evaluate the data, which is very powerful because the drinking your own Kool-Aid type of thing, you can think you're doing great until you stand up in front of 50 other intelligent people and say, this is what we're doing, this is what we're finding, and this is our conclusion, and have somebody else say, I don't know how you draw that conclusion. And then, yeah, then you're into some good discussion that does a sanity check. And, you know, many of our members have told us that, you know, one of the strengths of the organization is that it is kind of full of sanity checks. You're showing and talking and discussing things in a large group of people with various backgrounds and experiences. So you get a lot of different questions that helps you to define more about what it is you're doing and seeing. And, you know, your project team might be a little stymied and all of a sudden the guy from NIST comes up and asks some question because he may not have understood much about the project, but boy, he just came up with a question that everyone stops and says, oh, yeah. Maybe we do need to look at it that way. That's one of the strengths of those meetings, besides the interactions also. You know, you're at a meeting with people that you might never have met or been able to meet and sit across in your career. And all of a sudden, there's somebody that you've listened to their papers, say, for years, and they're sitting right next to you now. And you can meet them and talk to them and ask questions. Now, I just want to make one more point on it, is that if you're a member of HDP, all projects are open to you. All the data from all projects is open to you. It's not like some consortia in which you, if you're on the project, you get the information. If you're a member of HDP, you have access to all project presentations, all project data, and all project findings and final reports. So that's very powerful, as we were just laughing at. We have 24 projects in progress now. We've had 24 for many years. That's a lot of background data on information that is available just for being a member of HDP.
I can attest certainly to, you know, when you talked about, you could just sit down at one of the meetings and be plopped down next to folks that you've heard of or read their work. I can certainly attest to that. You have referenced NIST, IPC, you know, some of these other organizations in the course of our talk. Where does HDP fit into the scope relative to IPC, INEMI, the Universal Area Consortium, SMTA, you know, all these other trade groups that have, you know, work going on in some way, shape, or form?
Good question. We are associated with most of the other organizations, we'll say, in the electronic industry. We are members of and have mutual membership in IPC, as an example. Now, we don't set standards like IPC. That's kind of where we're different from them. Their organization is there to set standards for the industry. And we don't do that. We don't set standards. We truthfully don't even, you know, make winners and losers. We give data and we let the membership or the industry make their own decisions about what the data is telling them. But we do provide data. We, as I mentioned, you know, we give papers at IPC, we give papers at SMTAI conferences to inform the industry about our findings. We work with some of the IPC committees. We will be willing to share our data at, you know, many of the IPC committees to help influence what our members need to have done. From the standards making, we are a part of them, but we don't do that. Now, we're very close with INEMI. Okay. Now, INEMI runs projects like we do. They probably don't run as many because they've got other directions, such as the roadmaps, which INEMI basically publishes. We don't publish roadmaps, again, but we're very closely associated. We run some concurrent projects with them. Some of the low silver alloy projects, harsh environmental alloy projects, those are kind of concurrent. We share a lot of information back and forth on them because we want to make sure that we're not duplicating work that the other consortiums are doing. We utilize the INEMI roadmap to gather ideas and topics for some of our projects. And that's very valuable to us because we can see what they're saying it's going to, and we can look at some of the emerging technologies that might fill those gaps. The Universal or Area Consortium, again, they do a lot of project work, very good work, and we also work with them. We do run some interchange of projects. They help us out a lot with some of the testing because of their great facilities for testing. So we have a close relationship of exchange of information and help. I think the difference, if you look at AREA compared to us, is that the AREA Consortia is basically funded by its members and they run the projects and give the data back to the membership, where HDP projects are run and resourced by our members themselves. That's kind of where we differ from the AREA. And we think it's of high value to our members because our membership has hands-on, basically. They've seen this thing work from the beginning up to final conclusion. So as far as trying to incorporate, say, a new material or a new process into their shops, well, they've watched it and they've heard of all the gotchas. They've heard of all the don't do agains and do again all through the project. So by the time its conclusion is, our members already know how to do it. They already know all the good, the pros and cons of that. They're not just given kind of a report they've been a part of it. So it cuts a lot of time out of their pre-development work to incorporate this newer materials or knowledge. We also have a good relationship with EIPC. Again, we have mutual association with them in Europe. We support them with papers and presentations, and they support us by allowing us to utilize their booth at various conferences to display our information. We're looking at more in the future of holding some joint conferences with them. You know, as we mentioned earlier, we're an international consortium. We have sites in Europe, in the UK. We have members here, facilitators, all across the U.S., starting from the East Coast in New Hampshire into the center of the country in Texas, several of us are. I'm out on the West Coast. We have a Canadian representative in Ottawa, and we have an associate in Singapore. All of these are various offices and sites, so that when we run a project, we can run it, basically run it where it's more time zone friendly for the majority of the people on the project. So we run global projects, and we do that with our staff members around the globe.
So it sounds like you have some real synergies with the other trade groups, and even more distributed than I'd probably had recognized. One of the reasons why I wanted to have you on this podcast is because HDP has been around for many years, and it's really sort of flown under the radar, I think, in many respects. And I feel like there's a lot of good work that's being done here that needs to be recognized, be a little bit higher profile. Let's talk a little bit about, how somebody would join. I imagine that there is some cost to becoming a member. Could you just briefly talk about what the cost structure is like? I think you've really pretty established what all the benefits are. How does somebody go about actually joining HDP?
Membership in HDP is open. Our charter allows anybody basically to join HDP. We have two membership levels, basically a Class A and a Class B, and that has to do with your revenue. So if your company has revenue greater than $50 million, then you would have a Class A membership, and it would cost $17,000 a year. That's not a lot of money. One, it's not a lot of money in comparison to what you get, but it's compared to many other organizations, it's not a lot of money to begin with. And also, it's not site specific. Okay. If your company joins and you have two or three sites, they're also members. So you can get a lot of people interested in doing a lot of work and gaining a lot of knowledge for a little bit of money. If you are less than $50 million in revenue, then you can get a Class B membership. And we do that so that smaller companies can join at a reduced rate. And that's basically half of the 17. So that would be $8,500 a year for smaller companies to belong to us. And we're fairly divided among them. We have a few more Class A than Class Bs, but we still have quite a few smaller companies that are joining because they see the real benefit of getting this knowledge that, some of these projects cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to run, and they just can't afford to do that themselves. In a cooperative situation like ours, you can get that information, and you can do it at a lot less money.
It really sounds like pennies on the dollar, John, for the price of maybe about a fifth to an eighth of a rookie engineer's salary. You have access to just an enormous amount of research and engineering talent. That's really quite a bargain, in my opinion.
Yeah, we think so. It's, again, we're able to do that. One, because we're all part-time. We're consultants to HDP. So there's not a lot of high overhead in the organization. When we put our time into it, we're putting our time into the projects, which is what, you know, what the organization is designed for. And you're right, when you think of $17,000 for a Class A company that can see 24 projects being done and multiple sites of getting that knowledge out, we've had people join us simply because we're, you know, becoming like a training class for some of their younger engineers. They can get on the project. They can watch how a project is run. They can hear how people are analyzing analyzing the data. They're seeing how people are running it. And the data they're getting is not older textbook information. It's like new information for the newer engineers to hear and see what's happening in the industry now. Our viewpoint is it's probably the best best bang for a buck that you can get out in consortia.
And you have another meeting coming up. I think your next meeting is in September, right? COVID knock on wood here.
Yes. It's in October. Right now it's planning on being around October 9th. And it's being hosted by IBM in Rochester, Minnesota.
And if people want to find out more about HDP, where would you send them?
I say just go to our website at hdpug.org. You'll see a lot of information. You'll see information on what projects. You'll be able to see information on, you know, who's running them, how we work, where the events are, the meetings coming up, cost structure, how to contact us. All that information is there. What you'll find is sometimes you won't find information because you'll need to log in as you're a member, and that brings up a whole nother, say, behind the wall set of information that members get to see. But there's an amazing amount of information on the front part of our website.
So hdpug.org. Well, I strongly encourage listeners to check out the website and just look at the variety of projects that they have tackled over the years. It really is remarkable. And you think about all the different, you know, standards and tests that they have influenced through their joint work. They're really doing a service for the industry. So that brings us to a close to today's episode. I want to thank John Davignon of the HDP User Group for joining us. And I want to remind listeners that today's podcast is sponsored by PCB West, the leading conference and exhibition for the printed circuit design and manufacturing industry, coming this September to the Santa Clara, California Convention Center. Visit the website and download the catalog at pcbwest.com. For PCB Chat, this is Mike Buteau. Have a nice day.